can step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 660. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined telephonically by my wonderful co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro. There you are. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This puppy streams on Wednesdays live at koop.org. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Today, we have live in the studio the folks from Filigree Theater talking about their show Lifted. Did I mention they're live in the studio? Also, later on, we'll be talking to Amadeus in their production of we're going to be talking to Penfold Theater in their production of Amadeus. And of course, Nicole and I and our lovely guests will have a lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Point North. Don't go away.
Come true right before the eyes. No matter what, this moment in time is one of those.
Okay, it is a momentous day here at Offstage and On the Air. Nicole, you there?
Da-da-da-da, I'm here.
Dun-da-da-dun, we actually have guests in the studio. It's thrilling. I'm looking at actual people in the studio.
It's thrilling people? To see you.
There's what a lot they? Of pressure going on right now. I wasn't aware there was going to be this much pressure.
Oh yeah, there's lots of pressure. Those disembodied voices you are listening to are Elizabeth Newman.
Hello.
And Kevin Smith. Welcome, you guys.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Say hello to Nicole. That's important.
Hi, Nicole.
Hello, Nicole.
So that song we just heard was called Hit the Bullseye from Paralleled the Musical.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I said. I bet you're wondering why I said Hit the Bullseye, why I chose that song.
Why did you choose that song, Lisa?
Anybody else guessing? I keep forgetting there's more than one person here today.
No idea.
Well, I don't know if anybody else saw the Oscars, but there was some hitting going on.
It's like whole can of worms.
Yeah. So that's what we really only have a short time to talk about stuff, but I did want to start with the Oscars because there was a lot of theatrical stuff in it, other than the fight that went on. But what I just loved is that Coda won.
I was about to say, Coda, please talk about Coda. That was
yeah, so did anybody see that?
It's the only Best Picture nominee I saw twice, and I loved it.
Well worth it. Elizabeth, did you see it?
I have not seen it yet, but my dad just emailed to recommend it to me.
Oh my God, more than recommend. So Coda, for those that don't know, is an acronym that means children of deaf adults. And these are kids that have grown up with adults. And this is a story of a young girl in a deaf family. She is hearing and she wants to be a singer, which kind of flies in the face of deaf culture. Because most deaf people aren't known for their singing abilities, I guess. So it won the award, and I'm so glad. I don't mean to poo-poo the world of a dog or the life of a dog or whatever that thing was of a dog, but oh my God, I did not like it.
I saw that just last Friday night, Power of the Dog, and I just went, what's the big deal with this movie?
Thank you, Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. That's why there's different strokes for different folks. I mean, I haven't seen it, so but I
different
probably
strokes
feel the same way
for different folks. So
it's what makes the world go round.
More Coda news is that the good friends, our good friends out in Los Angeles at Deaf West, are creating a musical on Coda.
Yeah, so exciting.
Yeah, and they're doing it along with the Vendôme Pictures and Pathé Films, who did the movie. They don't have any creative folks assigned to it yet, but I just love it. You know, Coda back.
And they had announced that a few days before they had even won the awards for the Oscars.
They
so
did.
That was really cool. It wasn't just like, oh, now we're going to do this because of this.
Yeah,
so
they did. True. And so we know, of course, Def West from their Broadway revivals of Big River back in 2004 and Spring Awakening in 2016, which I had, and we've heard this on the show before, but I had tickets to their closing night. But I had.
Oh, that's right. It was all the crazy snow. Wasn't it
was snowpocalypse, but also yeah. I made the decision before snowpocalypse because that was the day that the city closed the ground floor theater down.
I remember that.
Oh, me too.
I do remember all that. Yes.
And interestingly enough, Vendela was played by Sandra May Frank, who is a local and nationally known deaf artist who was in our fun home and in our Next to Normal.
Yes, and, she was.
And
she's
may very well.
On TV in New Amsterdam.
She is.
Right
she's
now.
She's on New Amsterdam. And spoiler alert, there may be future announcements for Ground Floor Theater that involve Sandra May Frank.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun, dun. But you know what I didn't know about Def West is they have other musicals that they produced on their own. One of them was called Sleeping Beauty Wakes in 2017. I don't know anything more about it than that.
I don't know that one. That sounds a little fascinating, if you ask me.
Me too. Well, so I just need to jump forward. There's a whole bunch of stuff on my list that I want to talk about, but we're not going to get to because we've got less than 10 minutes. But we did have two openings, one off-Broadway, one on-Broadway in the past week. And I should say, and I don't have a list of what they are, there are a zillion things starting previews right now so that they can open before the April something or other deadline for Tony. What's the word I'm trying to come up with? Tony
nomination.
Yeah, it's not the word.
Qualification.
But well, that's close to the word. Wasn't the word, but close. You win,
the cutoff
Elizabeth.
Date?
Yeah, cutoff date. Let's use that. Of which on the list to talk about, but we won't get to. But POTUS, that amazing new piece that's starting previews or is in previews. Also pushed
eligibility. That's the word.
Eligibility. Thank you. They push their date back or up, whatever. They're doing it sooner so that they can get in to be part of the Tonys. But Confederates at the Signature Center opened, which is the Dominique Morisseau new play. Does anybody know anything about this piece?
I've not heard about it.
I know little just bits and pieces. But
it's amazing. And Lisa B. Thompson here in Austin, Texas, just got back from New York. She saw it and she said it was amazing. So it's basically, and it's very dissimilar to a lot of Dominique Morisseau's plays in that most of her plays are linear and chronological, and this one breaks all of those. It involves two women, one a enslaved housemaid, who secretly learns how to read and spies for the Americans. And then one, a professor in current time. And I'm going to try to, I can't remember her name. But anyway, she has been the victim of a racial slur. And it's the parallels of these two women. And there are three other actors that play characters in each of these different timelines. And these characters, if I'm reading the reviews correctly, sort of parallel each. It's like a lot of this. And if you see, you could see me moving around.
Very descriptive.
It's very descriptive.
I totally got what you were doing from this.
This was a piece that was commissioned by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and is directed by Story Errors. And I bet you it makes the move uptown.
It sounds very, very interesting. I read that one. I read an article. I think it might have just been on Yahoo or something random that popped up. Like it was something that I saw somewhere when I was clicking somewhere, and I read it. It was interesting how it weaves in and out, and all the different themes within it weaving. I was like, this sounds intriguing.
Yep. And I'm just going to read this from the review from Did They Like It from Rangia's review. She says,
I should also say it's a nice 90-minute play, too.
Good. She says, in quote, in the present, there's Sandra, a commanding Michelle Wilson who conducts the emotions of everyone in the audience like a maestro, a renowned professor of political science who becomes the target of a hate crime when someone posts a picture on her door in which her face is photoshopped onto an archive image of a black slave woman breastfeeding a white baby. And then in the past, there's Sarah, played by Krystalyn Lloyd, who embodies the duality of vulnerability and strength with delectable ease, the young woman, the young slave woman who learned to read illegally and took her chances during the Civil War to help with the efforts towards emancipation. Morisseau posts a simple question for both Sandra and Sarah, how to get free. So I think it sounds really interesting.
Sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll add that to our list.
I agree. I'd like to hear Lisa B, what she has to say about it more.
Yeah, well, you'll get your opportunity because she's around.
I know.
And less intellectual or erudite, if you will, Plaza Suite opened with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Jessica.
And what's his name? Matthew Broderick. To, I'm just going to say, middling reviews. And more so about, well, a little bit about the production, but more so about the subject matter and how dated it is. It's 54 years old, and evidently they didn't do any kind of rewriting of it. They didn't zhuzh Neil Simon. They left Neil Simon alone.
And then what made me laugh is I saw all this coming out, and then today they're like, Sarah and Matthew want to record this. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you doing that if it's not any good?
Yeah, so, but the recording, everything. But bottom line is, regardless of how...
It would sell from that the other way for who they are on different reasons. I get it.
Well, then I didn't even need to say it. You just said it. So the reviews aren't going to kill them. They will continue on. They've got Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Here begs the question, when does it become about the money and when does it become about the art? I'm just saying. And I love Neil Simon.
Well, I don't know. Many people would argue using art and Broadway in the same sentence.
That's why I'm opening up a can of worms. I'm pushing buttons today, Lisa. Look at me.
You're pushing buttons. Oddly enough, when I say art, the last thing I saw Kevin Smith perform in was a little show called Art.
Art.
That's a great segue.
For that too, I believe.
What's that?
I definitely did not do that show for the money.
Wait, hold on just a second. Go ahead, Kevin.
I said I definitely did not do that show for the money. It was for the art.
There you go. It was for the art, and literal and figurative.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, and then we're just going to jump right to my last thing, which is Godspell. I'm sure you read about this Antonio Banderas' future production of Godspell.
Yes, with his new theatrical company. Are you kidding me? I'm all over it. I see a trip to Spain in my future. My passport is ready and current. So,
his company is called Teatro del Soho. I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm going to say Caixa Bank or Caixa Bank. It's got that XI in Spanish, which is Oaxaca.
Share.
I don't know.
Share. Like Teixeira. Nick Teixeira.
Anyway, so he has currently running right now a Spanish language company. And as we spoke about last week, a Spanish language chorus line. And soon to be a Godspell.
With his new theater.
Well, actually, he's not running. I think company's already closed because he performed in both of those productions. They don't say whether he will perform in this. It will be directed, though, by Emilio Aragon, who I don't know. But
I think if you saw him, you would totally recognize him. When you see a picture of him, you'll be like, oh. But he, he's got a pretty intensely amazing resume himself.
Well, that is good. I wish we could talk about it all day long, but I think maybe a field trip to Spain would be in order.
Yes, please.
I have plenty of points and passport. Let's have a conversation.
Me gusta España.
Yes.
Which, interestingly enough, is the name of my fourth book.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, well, let's go out listening to a little bit of Godspell in Espanol. This is Diego Mandel singing Ciudad Hermosa. Anybody? City? Oh, God, I forgot. I forgot the actual title. City. Oh, Beautiful City. There it
yeah,
is.
It was right there
in the title in Spanish. Here it is. We'll be right back.
This is Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, you know what? I forgot about this. We're going to stop and listen to this real quick. Totally forgot about it. Remember last week we did the Lou Berger TikTok? I know the lyrics,
yeah.
I don't. I got another one. Let's just listen to this.
This is Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors.
And I know the words.
And I don't.
One, two, three, four.
Tell me this feeling will last till forever. Tell me the bad times are clean washed away.
Okay, this feeling, it's gonna last forever. And all the bad times will be washed away. Oh, they're gonna go, boy. Way out of your life. All those bad thingies. Not here.
Yes, you can be more the girl that's inside.
Okay. I think I'm going to play one of those every week. They're just so much fun.
I think that's a great tradition to start.
Mm-hmm.
They're so much fun. And it's fun to watch them. I, of course, got this on the TikTok. And it's fun to watch them. You see the one guy that knows it singing, and then he points to the other guy when he's supposed to sing. So with that, now let's go to break listening to Beautiful City in Espanol. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa. And who else? Oh, and who else? Do it again.
Nicole.
You weren't on the air. And who else?
Hello.
Oh, good. Well, this is good. This is our first on-air interview in many years, actually, and that's not an exaggeration. So we are so happy to have the producing artistic director from Filigree Theater. I think I got that title right.
You did, thanks.
Yay! Elizabeth Newman. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, it's so exciting to be here.
And one of the actors in the current show called Lifted is Kevin Smith.
Good to be here.
And I just need to ask you, is it J. Kevin Smith or Kevin Smith? What do I call you?
You just call me Kevin Smith. All my friends call me Kevin.
Okay. J. Kevin.
J. Kevin. It's my formal name.
Well,
I call him Smith.
So Filigree came on the scene about 3 years prior to the pandemic.
Yes.
And got shut down right before this show from the pandemic, correct?
Yes, this is our epic season 3, which started fall of 2019 and is now going to spring of 2022.
Amazing, isn't it, when you think about it?
It's crazy. For perspective, my daughter was in the beginning of first grade when we started this season, and now we're looking at end of third grade.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So before we talk about your show, a lot of theaters did some online offerings, Zoom readings, etc. Did Filigree Theater do anything during the downtimes?
You know, we didn't. We made the choice to kind of go into COVID hiatus, support and laud and enjoy our friends and the theater community for doing and finding creative ways to keep making theater happen. We periodically, for the Lifted cast and designers and crew, would be in touch and sort of look ahead to when kind of some do little mental health check-ins and then just kind of set our sights on fingers crossed and toes crossed when we could come back with the show.
I've very much enjoyed having the extra 2 years to learn my lines.
Oh my God, that's good.
All of them, right?
I'm almost there.
Yeah.
So this show is called Lifted. It's by Charlie Thurston, who you have a connection with. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, so Charlie is dear friends from his MFA program with one of my best friends growing up, who is also a director. And I found Lifted on New Play Exchange, and then when I read it and sort of read Charlie's bio, I realized that he had gone to Brown with Talia Klein, one of my best friends ever. And yeah, he actually came to Austin the last normal weekend, back when the worst thing in the world was the fact that South By had been shut down.
That was amazing. That was pretty incredible.
It was a big weekend. So we had a great final weekend before everything went to.
I enjoyed that one rehearsal we had before we shut down.
Wasn't that great?
It was great, man.
I do feel bad. I mean, I was fortunate enough to not be. We were about to go into production, but we hadn't really even delved into the production side of it yet. So I feel very fortunate that I was not one of those companies that had it taken away. Although the show we were going to do, because of course we were only going to be shut down for a few months.
Yeah, remember that?
We rescheduled the show Rainfall Special on Me, I think 4 times.
Yeah.
And we finally did it, and then Omicron showed up. So that was interesting. So tell us about Lifted. What's the show? Give us the nickel tour.
So it's exciting. It's a world premiere production.
A WPP.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, I like that. That's it. I'll start using that now.
Feel free.
It'll be on all the postcards. So it takes place in the dystopian near future in a world where birds have gone extinct. They come back all of a sudden in an inexplicable event and carry off a teenage boy kind of out of nowhere. And his father, played by J. Kevin Smith, and his twin brother, played by James Lindsley, and his girlfriend, Rhea, played by Madison Palomo, are left to figure out what they're going to do of it. What they are going to do, they come up with wild plans to try to go find him. Mm-hmm. So that's where the core of the story. But in between each scene, the same three actors play...
Birds. Their...
yes! Yes! Shh, that's the big twist. No.
Spoiler.
They play, there's a chorus structure in between the interstitials. So while the actual narrative is the very personal story, the epicenter, the rest of how this event reverberates in the greater world is shown through these choruses. It's been very eerie to see how much the events of this inexplicable event and the sort of humanity's response to it. Charlie Thurston, you wrote a documentary.
He had no idea. Kevin, tell us about your character.
I don't play the other teenage son. I play the father. And it's been interesting because I've played a lot of fathers over the past several years. This is the first time I have played a father while actually being a father.
Oh.
I'm a father of a new toddler myself.
Mazel tov, as my people say.
Thank you. It brings a new perspective.
Sure.
To a part like this. It also doesn't hurt that my character's son, who got taken away, is named Max. My actual son is also named Max. So,
mind blown.
Yeah.
That's why we cast him, so that he'd remember the name of his kid.
But it's really interesting. You know, Wayne has his demons, addictions, anger. But he's clearly, when the play begins, has made a choice in his life to try and be a better dad, to be the kind of dad he needs to be for his kids. And now he's suddenly having to deal with this new crisis of one of his sons disappearing inexplicably and having to figure out what to do and deal with his relationship with his other son. It just makes for a really interesting character. It's been a lot of fun to play and a great way to come back after a couple of years off.
Well, Sharon, I actually kind of appreciate the your personal story in this, because I'm guessing, just a guess, that in 2020, when you first started this and first started working on your character, you did not have the knowledge that you now have of what it is like to be a father. So how did your approach to your character change dramatically from 2020 to now?
I think it did. You know, when we started this 2 years ago, my child was already born, but he was just a baby. And now he's older.
He's just a baby.
But now he's a toddler and he has opinions and we fight. And when you have fights and arguments with your son, it doesn't matter how old he is, you learn how to deal with those situations. And of course, I have arguments and fights with my son in this play, and it helps inform how those arguments transpire and how you respond to what they say. So it's made a big difference. It's been really interesting.
Sure. And Elizabeth, you are also, we didn't mention, you also directed this piece. So how has it been for you? So this has been obviously a very long process, and you must have, as a director, gone through some changes as you've seen the world change and the things that have gone on. And now as you're approaching it now, did you see a lot of changes between 2020 and now from your perspective?
Not only are we the company creating this, but also we know our audience has gone through huge life changes, world-changing events. And it definitely has brought up questions and stuff that I've reflected with Charlie of, you know, what is the life experience? We know that these characters are, you know, in the near future, we're saying maybe 50 years in the future, and sort of what is it that they have, all of us having been able to live through sort of very serious, terrifying events. I think we have more of an understanding of what, not a projection of like, ooh, what would it be like if this happened? It's like, well, something, you know, we have all experienced a pandemic and other horrifying events. So it's changed sort of our approach to the characters and sort of what these characters have lived through just as a matter of course. You know, mm-hmm. in the world where birds have gone extinct, something that Charlie and I have talked about is that this is a universe, while there aren't expressly real life events named in the script, there are ties to, this is a world where they have experienced pandemics, they've sure. experienced climate change, they've experienced and become inured to that and survived that. It's taken a toll physically on all the characters, especially I'd say the adults. But then it's like, and then in that universe, this is still a watershed event.
Sure.
And then also just in terms of logistics, we were planning to go up in Picture Box 2 years ago in an indoor space.
We should say that this is a company that Kevin runs and had a studio at the time, but no longer.
Yes.
Yep.
So we're now going up at the event space, All the Sudden, the art space. Happily, the play is set in a backyard, so our production is going up outside.
Right. I do want to talk about that in a second, but just, and we don't have a whole bunch of time left, but there's an Icarus feeling to this play, is there not?
There absolutely is, and there are particular references to the Icarus story as well.
Interesting.
So, Icarus flies too close to the sun. So I actually did. I had not heard of the event space All of a Sudden, and I looked up just the address and saw a house. And then when I looked up All of a Sudden, I saw there's like a Quonset hut or a metal building in the back of the house. Are you indeed inside this building, or are you outside in the yard?
We're actually, so there is. It's a big sort of warehouse, which is a collaborative art space. The production goes up behind the space. The script calls for a house and a shed, and lo and behold,
there it is.
You know, Allison Lewis is a wonderful set designer, and we're like, oh good, we can art direct because here's the shed.
Well, great. Tell folks where they can get information and when you open and close.
Sure. So tickets and information are at filigreetheater.com, and we open Thursday, April 7th, and we close on Sunday, April 17th, and we run Thursdays through Sundays at 8 p.m.
And is there a rain, rain plan if it's raining?
Bring an umbrella.
The set involves tarps. We'll be letting audiences know as needed.
Awesome. Elizabeth Newman and Kevin Smith, thank you for coming on Offstage in the Air.
It's so great to be here.
Thank you.
We're glad to be back.
And I truly look forward to seeing this. We will be right back.
Thank you.
Rain is pouring down like the
heavens. There you go. We just have a couple of local things I want to talk about. First and foremost, I had known about this because it went out on the press releases. And then it made it to the Broadway briefing today, which I found very, very exciting. And that is the fact that Don Toner of Austin Playhouse is announcing once again his retirement.
Yeah, he is as retired as he could be. I mean, he'll be a face
still a presence on the board and stuff, but yeah, he's stepping down.
Don't think you could ever really truly get rid of him, Austin Playhouse. And Don Toner has been a staple here in Austin, Texas, not only in his tenure as the creator of Austin Playhouse, but he also, and I forgot the name of the theater, but he was out at the State before that.
Live
and then
Oak
there was
in the State.
And then there
Live
was
Oak.
Oh, Live Oak. Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. What it was. So, so that's good. And I believe his last, or ostensibly his last directing thing for Austin Playhouse is the show that's going on right now. And they will be on our show next week. And remind me the title of the show with Ben Wolfe.
The Catastrophist.
The Catastrophist. What a great title. Elizabeth is nodding, which doesn't work on the radio. Completely. Just to let you know. And now she's doing a handwork. Also doesn't work on the radio.
Secrets here.
But I thought I'm always very excited when I see local stuff in American Theater Magazine. They must have a great PR representative.
They might.
Another thing.
Yeah, it is exciting. And what a career Don has had, like not just in Austin, but all over. When you really read about him, you're like, whoa.
Indeed. And I think he was one of the first interviews I gave on Offstage and on the Air. I thought that,
and I was going to ask you.
Austin Playhouse used to be out at Penn Field. And they did a production of Jacques Brel Is Alive and as Alive and Well and Living in Paris. And I went out there and watched it, and I remotely recorded him. And we do have a legal ID of his, which we need to start playing again.
We need to start playing that. We need to put that into the rotation.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
And it went something like this.
Hello, I'm Don Toner of Austin Playhouse. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air.
Something like that. That's my Don Toner impersonation.
Interesting.
And although I
have heard it before, but it's been a while.
It has been a while. And, you know, I've known Don Toner for, my entire career here in Austin, which is almost 20 years. And I would venture to guess he does not know who I am.
Elizabeth just made a face.
But no. What I say about most other people is they don't like me, but they know who I am. I don't think Don has an opinion because he simply doesn't know who I am.
I'm going to start translating for Elizabeth's gestures. I think she meant to say, how is that even possible that he doesn't know who you are?
Ding, ding, ding. It's true.
Well said.
And I believe I met Elizabeth like right when you moved back here.
When I moved here.
I didn't know whether you came back.
I'm from New York originally.
Good for you. What city?
What city in New York?
Yeah. Well, there are more than one, believe it or not.
Because I said that, can you tell? No, I'm from Manhattan.
Did you live in Manhattan?
I did.
Good for you. The city.
I could have guessed that by your accent.
Really?
Well, because people that grew up in Manhattan typically don't have a New York accent.
That's true.
No, they don't.
Versus the boroughs, which they do. So the last thing I want to talk about is quasi-locally. I found the article kind of interesting.
Don't forget all the rest of upstate, you know. You gotta
Where your mother lives? Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, in general. I mean, to the whole state. There's a whole state.
I know. And
my roots are in this state, but I'm just saying.
And by the way, don't tell people that live in central New York that they're in upstate New York.
That's true. You have to go all the way
up to the Adirondacks.
To Buffalo. Yeah. The Finger Lakes are beautiful.
Well, the Finger Lakes is central New York.
Well, yeah, it's up towards
I spent a summer in the Finger Lakes. The very last acting job I ever had was in the Finger Lakes. But anyway,
though my mom lives up there now, she's a New Yorker originally too.
She is indeed. I am not. So here's the deal: Broadway summer musicals changed their name. They rebranded themselves.
Dallas summer musicals.
Dallas summer musicals. What did I say?
Broadway summer musicals.
Oh, Dallas summer. Thank you. Dallas summer musicals rebranded themselves to Broadway Dallas. What is it? Broadway Dallas?
Yeah.
Which I found interesting because I had just did some research on Dallas summer musicals a few months ago. Because back when, before I moved to New York and I lived in Texas, Dallas summer musicals was a producing company. As well as in Fort Worth, Casa Mañana was a producing company. Now, neither of those companies, they're now not producing companies. They bring in Broadway shows, similar to Bass bringing in Broadway Across America. And Dallas Summer Music.
Dallas Summer Musicals is part of that whole Broadway Across America.
Right. So, but
right now I should say Dallas Broadway.
Dallas. But I just thought it was interesting because I had always thought up until just a couple months ago that Casa Mañana and Dallas Summer Musicals were producing companies. But then I thought, you know, I don't know anybody that's done any of those shows lately.
So the Broadway, they were still producing not too long ago because Libby, when she was in Anne here, she went up and did it there in Dallas Summer Musicals, but they were producing and they only got the Broadway contract for the tours a couple of years ago. So this is really now, I think there's been confusion in the market and now I think this is helping them
True.
Clear it up. But they have a few different theaters there.
It is a gorgeous theater. It's right there on the park grounds, the Texas State Fairgrounds. That's the word I was trying to come up with.
I was like, the fair with big tax?
Yep, which I've never been to, but I need to go. But you know what? We've run out of time. That's it. So hold on. I need to see whether I'm going to skip the piece of music I was going to play and just go right into. Well, we are going to play this little piece of music from Ain't Too Proud, which is the next show that they're doing at Dallas Broadway. And then we'll go to our next guest. So here is from Once in My Life from Ain't Too Proud. Here we go. Hopefully it's in there. We'll see what happens when I push the button.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me.
Yeah, Once in My Life. I believe Tom Jones made that famous, didn't he? Yeah, they're nodding because they're away from their microphones. We're going to run right into our interview with the folks from Penfold Theater and their production of Amadeus, which is currently playing at a very exciting venue called Ground Floor Theater. And we'll come back and talk after. Here is that interview.
Oh my God, I am the luckiest girl in the world because here joining us via Zoom is the director and some of the cast of Penfold Theater's production of Amadeus. And I would like to welcome to the show the director, the incomparable Liz Fisher. Hi, Liz.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you so much. Hey, Nicole. Good to see your faces.
And we have Diego Arroyo Aceves, who plays Amadeus.
Yes. Great honor. Great honor.
Thank you. Thank you. And we have Miranda Marquez, who plays, amongst other things, I'm going to forget the character name, so help me.
Yes, glad. Very excited to be here.
Help me with the character name of the young protege.
Oh, yes, Caterina Calavieri, the opera student.
Caterina Calavieri, which was, oddly enough, my sorority name in college.
I was just wondering if, Lisa, was that your sorority name in college?
It was indeed. So, Liz, tell us about this show, Amadeus.
Yeah, so this production of Amadeus is a little bit different than your sort of typical one, if you've ever seen either the movie, which, of course, won all of the Oscars back in the day, or, as I believe you actually told me, Lisa, you saw not the original production, but the first American production on Broadway, directed by the one, the only Sir Peter Hall, and starring Ian McKellen.
Correct, I did.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome sauce.
I'm so jealous.
Well, you know, Liz, it just means I'm old, so,
so
don't be jealous.
You are a sparkling 24-year-old, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Me, times three.
Amadeus tells the story of course, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart through the lens of Antonio Salieri, his sort of colleague who maybe has a little bit of a jealousy problem, sort of recognizing the brilliance of Mozart, and then systematically goes about trying to, oh, I don't know, destroy Mozart. And along the way, we get to hear selections of not only Salieri's music, but Mozart's music, his symphonies, his masses, his operas, sort of tell the story of the life of Mozart.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's amazing. You know, I kind of liken the story of Salieri and Mozart to Van Gogh and Gauguin in many ways. Because Gauguin would watch, Van Gogh would just like slap something together really fast and it was beautiful. And Gauguin had to work really, really hard to achieve the same kind of thing. And they're very similar in like a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think there's something really interesting because, of course, you know, this play started off as a play, then turns into a movie. The story is an absolutely fictionalized sort of conspiracy theory, right? Like the
right.
Spoiler alert, Salieri claims to have killed Mozart in this. But of course, historically, like, this isn't true. We know this. And yet, you can go online and find blogs and podcasts where people spend a lot of time researching, trying to figure out whether or not it might be true. Because, of course, sure. We love a good conspiracy theory.
We do, especially these days. I'd like to tell our audience that we have been joined by Ryan Crowder, the producing artistic director of Penfold Theater. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hi. Hello. Good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. We're glad you're here. Diego, you know, one of the things that I was really looking forward to and seeing the production is that Mozart, or as I like to call him, Wolfie, he enters the scene at an energy level somewhere around 12 and pretty much stays there the entire show. So that's a lot of work, and you do that. So tell us about how you gear up for this show every night.
Ooh, I mean, I like to come in like 30 minutes before we have to be there, and I just do stretches. Like 30 minutes, I'm just stretching, I'm breathing. I've eaten my sandwich for the day before. Thankfully, there's always been some sort of cookie or snack or chocolate for after the show. That really helps a lot. Because afterwards, I am drained. I am tired. I need a little sugar boost. But I mean, I think it's just, yeah, it's finding that sort of physicality. And I think, I mean, just the play is beautifully written and so expertly crafted. Like everything you need is right there in the text of how it describes Mozart as a sort of very childish, youthful character. And I mean, it's sort of being a man child and like, okay, well, what were you doing when you were a little kid? You were running around, like doing, like rolling around the floor, doing cartwheels. And it's just elevate that to a much more eccentric sort of vice indulging level with his sort of like relationship with his wife and a lot of the other women in this show and just all that sort of level. But I think, yeah, it's just gearing up. And I know Liz and I, we had a lot of conversations about how do we do those elevator drops throughout the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me is the hardest challenge I feel with this role. It's not like I can come in and do 12 for the entire show. I can be running around doing all these crazy things for like 2 hours. But I think for me, it's finding that more like subtlety in, you know, when Salieri starts taking his plan to action of ruining Mozart's life. How does that affect him mentally and physically? And how does he start slowing down until his eventual demise? And I think that in of itself, I think being still is the harder part of the role than finding
out. Sure. Sure. Especially because inside you still have all that energy, but you have to capture it and be a real human being, which, you know, nobody's always at 12.
Exactly.
And Miranda, you among all you play several roles, but you play Catalina Cavallari, and who starts out as the student of Salieri and is absconded by the young Mozart. So that seems like a really fun role to play.
Oh, it's great! It's very much fun. Catalina's very sassy. but it's been a really fun opportunity as well to like be able to differentiate between characters and have all these fun people to play. It's been a lot of fun.
Sure. And I must say that the staging, thanks to Liz, is just really wonderful and creative. And you take a show which typically would have many more than 9 actors, and you've pared it down with a lot of people playing a lot of different roles. And it looks like you as an ensemble performance have a lot of fun, you know, not like the two major leads who only get to play one thing.
I know. They only get one. We get the mini. It's a perk. It's an ensemble member.
Now, there is singing done by the cast, and most of it is a classical voice, operatic style singing. You were one of the people that sang. Are you a trained classical singer?
I have been trained. trained in some vocal things, mostly musical theater, actually. So this is one of my first operatic experiences. But I was very, very grateful for the music consultant. We had a musical consultant, Claudia Chapa, who was amazing and helped us all so, so much. And she really like showed me a lot of like the basic operatic techniques, like breath support, drinking all that water, getting good sleep, and really, really helped me out on just the road to success for a lot of these songs. They're fun songs, you know, that Queen of the Night aria.
I wish we had the video for the listeners right there when you said that.
Yes. And y'all did an awesome job. Now, Liz, typically when we see Amadeus, or more importantly, hear the music from Amadeus, it is Mozart, usually recorded by some kind of symphony. But you've taken some liberties here. Tell folks about the music in this piece.
Well, so Schaffer, you know, wrote in quite a bit of Mozart's music into the play, but in the original production, you don't always get to necessarily hear all of the vocal parts. And I thought it would be really important to be able to hear it and be able to showcase an ensemble who could not only act the play, but sing the play. And then Penfold in this production is actually partnering with the Central Texas Philharmonic. So we have a really exciting opportunity to not only just perform the play of Amadeus, but perform it with a full orchestra. And when I was chatting with Ryan and Nathan about the project, they offered up a bit of a challenge to me, which was to try to figure out how do we reimagine this play for the 21st century, since this is one of the core elements of Penfold's mission, is reimagining not only what the canon is, but what we think of as canonical plays. And Amadeus absolutely fits that mold. So thinking about who Mozart was, what his impact is in the sort of history of music, I started thinking a lot and seeing, of course, that he's pretty fond of a remix and too many notes. I started thinking about, well, what would Mozart do if he was writing music today? And I was like, well, it seems like maybe a sort of EDM hip hop inflection in music seems like one that would fit really well. Being able to sample other musicians' work, throw in his own sort of twist and come up with something really exciting. That sounds like what a lot of really incredible musicians are doing in those fields right now. So I approached a local composer that I know, his name is Michael Murray, and said, hey, how would you feel about collaborating with me on remixing all of Mozart's music? So that way we can also show the sort of gulf between Salieri's music, sort of stuck in the past, and Mozart, this forward-looking musician who's creating kind of music as we know it today. And Michael said yes, and thus began our fantastic collaboration of remixing. We have 20 different pieces of Mozart's that have been remixed throughout this production. And sometimes it's different selections from the Lacrimosa or his Mass in C minor, selections from Magic Flute, Marriage of Figaro, Abduction, on and on and on and on and on. And Michael remixed every single one of them. And sometimes he's remixing it through sort of his own work. And sometimes he's sampling other artists from the 20th and 21st century who we feel like embody qualities of Mozart, whether it's innovation in their musicality or sort of pop culture references that feel a little bit like Mozart in spirit. So it's been a lot of fun working with him on developing that.
Diego and Miranda, both of you are in school right now at Texas State. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes, that is correct.
And interestingly enough, as I read in the bios, you're both sophomores at Texas State.
Yes, that
is correct. Yes.
Do you have many classes together?
We have a lot of, we are both in the Texas State BFA acting program. So basically like for the next two years, we are taking like half of our classes together, like nonstop. I see her like every single day, basically.
Every day.
Well, great.
I love
it. In just one or two words, because we don't have a whole bunch of time. So you both are sophomores. So ostensibly you got two more years at the school. What do you plan to do after you graduate? Miranda?
Goodness gracious, I would love to either go into some sort of theater. I'd check out film maybe, but I really do love live performance. There's nothing like it.
Okay, so you're moving to New York. Diego, what about you?
For me, I really like the opportunities Austin's leading to. Like, I really think Austin is really growing as a sort of really inspiring hub for theater and for film, just the way it's looking like to me, like it's like the next, like starting up Atlanta. So like to hop in on that early before it becomes unbearably expensive would be really nice.
Wonderful. So you'll take over artistic direction at Ground Floor Theater. Perfect. We, as Liz mentioned, Penfold Theater has a way of reimagining theater that's in the canon, if you will. So why Amadeus and why right now for Penfold?
Well, this was a project, you know, like so many projects that are finally making it to the stage today. This is a project that was being conceived before the pandemic. It started out over a coffee date with Stephen Sanders, who is the conductor for the Central Texas Philharmonic, talking about how could we work together and collaborate in some way. And he proposed this play to us. And when we approached Liz, we said, you know, we have this opportunity to do, you know, an amazing performance, but if we're going to put together Amadeus, what can we do? And that's when Liz came up with her idea. And it fits squarely in what Penfold is doing right now. The idea of reimagined classics, I think, is something that really came out of reflection during the pandemic. Having this be one of our first shows post-pandemic that is so emblematic of this new direction Penfold is going in, I think is perfect. And also, we wanted to come back in a big way. You know, we've been gone for 2 years. People have been used to sitting on their couches and watching Netflix. We wanted to do something that we felt was exciting and was going to pull people back into the theater.
And that you have. And and you opened on Friday, and the houses have been pretty good, as I know, because it is at Ground Floor Theater. Very quickly and briefly, I know that the city of Austin is stage two, but you're still requiring masks at your performance, correct?
That's right.
Okay. We know you're open now. How long are you playing? And when and where is the performance with the Philharmonic?
Oh, that's a great question.
Great questions, Ryan.
Yeah. Why would I be surprised? So we run for two more weekends. We close April 9th, Saturday the 9th. And then our performance with the Philharmonic is this Sunday, April 3rd at 4:00.
Wonderful. And where can folks get information about the show?
Penfoldtheater.org.
So thank you guys for coming to see this show. Thanks for coming to see my show. Thank you for being on my show.
We're just living in Lisa's world.
I'm fortunate enough that I get to watch bits and pieces of the show almost every night. So people can go to penfoldtheater.org, get more information, and maybe you stop by Ground Floor Theater. Who knows?
Do it all. That would be exciting, Lisa.
Okay, well, folks, you know that little piece of music that's playing behind me right now is actually from Penfold's production of Amadeus, and then you're showing a little bit of the mashup between the classical and the current. And I should say, hold on, I got to get my script here because I can't remember on my own. The composer is Michael Moray, and he did all that work for them. Well, we're coming up to the end. I should say to our listeners, some of you might be listening, you might not, because I just discovered that our podcast feed has not been feeding since August. So I'm going to try to get that fixed. And we will show back up in your feed. And those of you who are getting this in your mailbox, hopefully we can go back to getting it into your mailbox. I should say the music did just switch behind me. This is Symphony No. 29 by Johann Amadeus Mozart, or Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. I've got my Johann Sebastian Bach and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart mixed up. I'm so glad that you spent time with me here on Offstage and on the air. Next up here at Co-op is Texas Music Mixtape. No, Mark Fort, you cannot have the microphone yet. You have to wait another 2 minutes and then I will give it up to you. So this has been a very exciting day here at Co-op. We've had live people for three shows in a row with the lovely Kim Simpson and the International Folk Bazaar coming back to join us live in the studio. And as I mentioned again, next up is Mark, DJ Mark and Texas Music Mixtape. He's got a great show for you. Stand by for that. And then you join us next week when you look at when Nicole and I, maybe Nicole in person, looks at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.